Episode 3. Welcome to the third episode of Analog Thoughts. We're in this thing. Episode 3 is real. So I haven't put one out. I haven't recorded an episode in some weeks because I hit this sort of wall. I don't really know exactly what happened, but I became pretty depressed and I felt kind of fried and just burnt out in general, if that makes sense. I think that does make sense to most people. I think we all get fried and burnt and depressed. But it was a lingering thing, and I was like, what is happening? And I was just not wanting to be in front of a microphone and be this fake person. Not that I'm fake on the microphone, but I didn't want to have to pretend to be coherent or pretend to be happy. I was not in a great spot inside my own head, just for a variety of reasons, but through self-reflection and being able to take account of all the things I am thankful for, I was able to kind of crawl out. And through a lot of love from various different people in different directions and friends and family. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. That's my excuse for the lack of podcasts. Or lack of, me recording podcasts to give out to you. I didn't want to give you something that was this weird, inauthentic version of myself. So I just figured it was better not to. And if you're feeling, the way I was feeling, I'm sending all the love to you. And I know a lot of people are saying, I'm sending the vibes and sending the love. I'm sending all the good thoughts. But I feel you, and you're not alone. And it's okay to feel sad or broken or lost. It's normal. It's part of the human condition. Sometimes we all just get into these dark places, and it can be really intense and feel very, it can feel too real. But when you think about what's important in your life and you think about what you have and take count of everything you can be grateful for, it really helps, I promise. So this is episode 3. We're in it. We are in episode 3 right now. If you haven't listened to episode 1 and 2, feel free. They're out there on all the things. Probably the same thing you're listening to this on. I don't know why I said that. So far, we have done a format that is, I take questions from listeners. People send me questions, and I field those questions on the podcast, which you can do if you send questions to any of my Mount Analog social medias. I will add them to the queue of questions. But for this episode, I felt like giving my own point of view on subjects rather than fielding questions. I am going to get back to that format, but for this one, I just kind of wanted to, I had my own idea, so I kind of wanted to hit that rather than field more questions. I do have many, many more listener questions that I will be fielding in the future, though, so don't hesitate. If you have a thought, an idea, if you have something you want to hear me talk about, send it on over to any of my Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, email, all that stuff. I will find it and make note of it. I also have a Patreon. If you go to Patreon and look for MT.analogue, you will find me. You don't have to do the Patreon thing. Listening to the podcast is totally enough. But if you feel like supporting in another kind of way, I have different tiers over on my Patreon with different things you can get. Brain stuff. So for this one, I wanted to talk about the book of Revelation from the Bible. Not that I want to preach about it. Like we talked about in episode, I think both of the episodes that are out talked about sort of spiritual or metaphysical type things. I'm not in any way Christian. I'm not in any way, I think, any religion. I sort of identify with pieces of all of them. So I have read the Bible, and not that I have a working knowledge of every piece of the Bible, but the book of Revelations is a really interesting one. You know, we hear it referenced a lot in movies and songs and just culture in general. It's a super interesting book, and there's a lot of really strange monsters and a lot of really strange fables and allegories that all sort of collide into one apocalyptic puke, and it's pretty cool. So the Book of Revelation of Jesus, often called the Book of Revelations, was written by John. And some people think that John refers to Jesus' homie, his disciple, but John doesn't necessarily refer to him. It could be a completely different John. No one's 100% sure. John wrote this book claiming it as a vision of the apocalypse. If it sounds like I'm reading off notes, it's because I am. I took like a whole bunch of notes on this book, and there was no way I was going to be able to recite John's visions verbatim or even close to verbatim just from memory. So I took a lot of notes. It's a very dense book, and I'll just say before we really kind of dive into it, it is full of visions and tangent visions, and it's full of things John sees from angels, and those things will quickly transform into other things. And I'm just going to kind of talk about what John sees in this book. I'm not so much going to talk about my thoughts on what they mean. I will a little bit, but some of the book is taken for face value as tangible events that have happened or will happen or are happening now. And some people think that the Book of Revelations is very loose and very much open to interpretation. So I'm not necessarily going to say it's this or that. I'm just going to talk about what John says in the book. And like I said, I don't identify as a Christian person. I think this is just a really interesting book that bears exploring because of its cultural and spiritual and metaphysical influence on all of us. So, yeah, that's why I wanted to do it. So, like I said, John wrote this book claiming it was a vision of the apocalypse. And the word revelation actually means apocalypse. It's Latin for that which is uncovered. And it means that which is uncovered, but it actually comes from a Greek word that literally means to pull the lid off of something. And apocalypse is also a type of Jewish text which refers to a recounting of a prophet's dreams and visions that bring light to the divine perspective on human history and how things are and how things will end. So the apocalypse is kind of a word from God spoken through somebody. It's something that God is wanting to show his people while channeling it through someone to tell in a story or through a vision or what have you. Usually God will transmit this vision to a prophet in times of great need, like times of war or crisis, or when God feels the need to comfort people. And in this case, in John's time, the churches were becoming they were becoming sinners. They were becoming like debaucherous in the eyes of Christianity. They were stopping, you know, they were exploring different religions. They were drinking and having sex and just partying. They were just getting down. And it was during this time that John said God decided to contact him to say, hey, y'all need to quit because that shit ain't right. God doesn't like that. So John basically says that this prophecy is bringing all of the Christian text to a final conclusion or climax. The book is framed as a letter that was sent to seven different churches in ancient Roman provinces of Asia. So it's the way that the book is framed, it's John saying, I had a vision from an angel, and I'm writing it down in this letter, that I'm sending to the seven churches of ancient Rome. So seven overall is a huge number in the book of Revelations. It pops up over and over and over and over in the book. And it's actually a big number for the Bible in general. It's a symbol of the seven-day Sabbath cycle of the Old Testament. And because of that, John intertwines it into every part of the damn thing. The whole book is just 7, 7, 7, 7. It's coming in. So there's a lot of number seven. But for all you numerology homies out there, this one's for the seven, for those seven people. For the seven people listening, this one's for you. If you hear locusts, which is really ironic because we're talking about the book of Revelations, I don't know what's going on in Dayton, Ohio, but there's just been like a plague of locusts for, do you hear him? I hear him. I don't know if you can hear him, but there's mad locusts outside. And I was like, you know, there's literally nothing I can do about this, but it's so appropriate for this episode. We're just going to run it. We're creeping into the fall, and hopefully the locusts will subside a little bit, and I can have some quiet damn podcasts. I'm going to move my drink over here. So anyway, this book is full of sevens. John is preaching about this vision that he got from God, and he breaks it down in many versions of seven different ways. Where are we at? Seven is a huge number for the book of Revelations. Ah, here we go. Jewish prophecies often use numbers in a really symbolic way, not in a cryptic way, but more so in a way that alludes to events or stories that have happened in the Bible in previous books. Kind of like, hey, remember that thing that happened in like Genesis that had seven things going on? Well, here's kind of how it ties into this story. So they'll use numbers as a way to do callbacks, which John does a ton of callbacks in this. He's basically using the book of Revelations to call back to the entire Bible. And that's a whole nother podcast. So like I said, the book is framed as a letter to the seven churches of ancient Roman Asia. The first part of the letter explains to the churches how John was exiled to an island and visited by Jesus. Jesus was standing among seven burning lights. These seven lights are meant to symbolize the seven churches that John is addressing. Jesus goes into detail about what was wrong with the churches. Some were driven to ungodliness because of their wealth. Some had lost their morals altogether. Some had become apathetic to the needs of their congregations because of their status and power. Some were practicing pagan rituals or straying from the teachings of Jesus. There were still, however, those who remained faithful to Jesus. These faithful ones were being harassed and persecuted, maintaining their faith in Jesus. So there was a lot of, Christian persecution going on during this time. Jesus speaks to John and tells him to warn the seven churches that a time to make a decision is upon them. They will have to decide between faithfulness or compromise. So there were several Roman emperors around John's time that had persecuted and killed Christians. The emperor Nero, who will become a big part of this a little later, and the emperor Domitian, to name two of them. And because of Nero's persecution before John's time, and Domitian's persecution during John's time, there was a trend among the Romans to give up Christianity to avoid this. So basically people were saying, all right, you're going to chop my head off. I guess Jesus isn't that tight. And I'm going to be over here doing the stuff you want me to do. Jesus? I don't like Jesus. Do you like Jesus? No, he doesn't like Jesus either. We like to keep our heads, so we don't like Jesus anymore. And also, the Romans were giving up Christianity to take part in Roman ways. The debauchery, the sex, the drugs, the rock and roll. They wanted the whole damn thing. They wanted to do it all. And they were like, man, this was at a time where the Romans were like really exploring stuff like that. They were getting into orgies and drinking a lot of wine and having crazy ideas. It was the 60s of ancient Rome. People were having a lot of fun. And Jesus, and the people who liked Jesus were like, all this fun must come to an end. We can't be having all this, Rome. So in Jesus's address to John and also the seven churches, he calls for the Roman people to conquer these temptations of leaving their faith. He says that those who choose to maintain their faith will be rewarded. He goes on to describe these rewards in the final vision of this book, where the plains of heaven and earth meet. So, okay, we're really just starting to get into it. This is very dense. It's a very dense book, and I don't want to say it's the longest book in the Bible. I don't think it is by long shot, but it may be the most, one of the most dense in terms of just things happening, in terms of then this happened, this happened, this happened. It's just like a machine gun of events. So I took the Cliff Notes, and we're going to go through all of the events in the book. Having this vision explained to John in this way allows John to create a sense of tension and urgency amongst the readers. Shit's bad, but there's hope. Stay tuned and I'll explain how. How will the story unfold? Who will God smite? And why does he smite them? He hooks them in. Basically, he's saying, yo, there's stuff that's going to happen, and I need you to pay attention because it's going to get really bad. So after his visions of Jesus, John has a vision. Remember, John's on this exiled on this island. He has this vision with Jesus, and Jesus is giving him these sort of this preface of everybody's messing up. We need them to come back to the faith. So after his vision of Jesus, John has another vision of God's heavenly throne room. Surrounding God are all manner of earth creatures and creations. These creatures and characters are meant to symbolize all of earth and all the human nations on earth. Some of these creatures are otherworldly humans, human-animal hybrids, some are elder-looking people, some are vibrant creatures of light. They're all surrounding him and praising him and shouting how holy he is. God is holding a scroll sealed with seven wax seals. The scroll is a symbol of messages from the Old Testament and of Daniel's sealed scroll. So Daniel is another book in the Bible, and it's kind of a whole other recounting of visions and prophecies that are going to lead up to this thing. This is another example of, hey, remember that thing back in this part of the Bible? We're referencing it here. It's kind of an Easter egg type thing, and he just keeps doing this where he makes these references and revelations to other types of the Bible. I don't know if you're listening and you know anything about the MCU or anything. In the Marvel Cinematic Universe, when they make a new movie, there's always these references to the old movies and these little Easter eggs that they kind of embed inside of them. Like, hey, remember when Captain America took that thing and now here's the thing in this new movie? It's kind of like that, but with the Bible. So I'm not going to get into the book of Daniel because that's a whole other thing and it's a whole other cryptic long tangent. But yeah, essentially though, Daniel's vision and what is implied by John in Revelations is that the kingdom of God will come fully and completely to heaven as it is on to earth as it is in heaven. So John references Daniel, Daniel saying, heaven's coming to earth. John's like, heaven's coming to earth. Remember what Daniel said in episode one? Not my episode one, but the Bible's episode one. Turns out in John's vision, he has a really hard time finding someone that can open the scroll. Eventually, he discovers that a lion from the tribe of Judah can open the scroll. Thanks, lion. The lion is an Old Testament symbol of a king that would bring the vision of God's kingdom on earth through military conquest. The dude opening the scroll is a warlord for God. It's this lion. He envisions this lion showing up and being like, I got you. I'm a warlord lion. Let's go. So this is what John hears is going to happen in this vision. He says a lion's going to come and open the scroll. But then John turns, and instead of seeing a lion, a warlord lion, he sees a lamb covered in blood with its throat cut, which is metal, which is super metal. Ging, 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 ging. Then the lamb showed up and his throat was cut and he opened the scroll. Ging, 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 ging. So lots of symbolism going on here. The king lion warlord probably symbolizing like God's wrath, or could potentially be symbolizing the way that the Roman empires were conducting business. The bloody lamb obviously symbolizes Jesus, which this isn't the first time in the Bible Jesus has been depicted as a slain lamb. What John is saying is that the crucifixion and murder of Jesus is what ushered in the era of God's victorious kingdom. You killed my boy, you heathens, you'll pay. But it's not actually like that. The way that John writes it is that Jesus died for his enemies. Because of his resurrection, his death was not a defeat, and by dying for them and being reborn, he conquered them. It's very convoluted. Basically, the whole Bible's kind of convoluted. The book of Revelations is no different, with all of the crazy animals and symbols and numbers and visions and tangent visions. There's a lot of different ways to interpret things here. But that is the way that John alluded to things being interpreted. So God sits on his throne while the Lamb, Jesus, begins to open the scroll. And this part of his vision is meant as a reminder to humanity that God has the divine power to guide and control all aspects of history and reality in general. His word is final. It's already pretty dense. If you're still following me, we're getting in there. It's a very interesting book, and I encourage you to go read it yourself. It's a dense read. It's a thick read. A lot of religious texts are. I think the only ones that I've read that are super not dense are probably ones with like the Tao Te Ching. There's a lot of cryptic Confucius style of writing where when you open a door, a window shall close and the orange shall become green. He who sit shall know nothing is the true everything. Like things like that. But nothing that's like, and then I saw a vision, and then a demon showed up, and the demon was strangling Jesus, and then the other demon showed up, and then started strangling that demon, and that's when that demon had a vision, and I saw a lion that turned into a dragon, and the dragon came in, and it had a key, and the key unlocked. I haven't read anything quite as convoluted as the Bible, but I know they're out there, I've just not read them. And now we're going to get into some very symbolic stuff that can be interpreted in a bajillion different ways, and they're all set in sets of seven. The three sets of seven divine judgments. These things could be a set of linear events that are going to happen, or have already happened, taken at actual face value for how they were written, or just none of the above, or all of the above simultaneously. These things could be symbolic and represent the way things are going and the way things are headed. There are a lot of sevens. Seven seals, seven bowls, seven trumpets. The way that John writes about his vision lends itself to three different perspectives, past, present, and future, thus making this whole book open to interpretation as to when and how these things will transpire. Sorry for that tangent in it of itself. But let's get back to the lamb opening the scroll. John watches the lamb open the scroll, open up the first four seals of the scroll, and sees the four horsemen of the apocalypse. Another callback to the book of Zechariah, which, yep, another Easter egg, another reference. The four horsemen are meant to symbolize war, conquest, famine, and death. The fifth seal that the lamb undoes depicts Christians being murdered in front of God's throne. They beg to God and ask for help. They say, God, help us, please. Come on, we're getting murdered. God responds and says, chill. He says, he doesn't say chill. He says, what he actually says is rest. More Christians are going to die. So God controls reality. God allows suffering. God is kind of a mean dude. His people cry out and say, we need your help, bro. And he's like, all right, you guys hang out. There's going to be more of you to die. I got this plan, but like, you guys can just die for a minute. And so the Christians are like, okay, I guess we'll just die. The locusts. Jesus is mad. The sixth seal depicts the day of the Lord. Basically, this day has been described in many parts of the Bible. Fire, brimstone, God smiting the shit out of people, all of that classic stuff. This is when John has a vision of an angel with a ring. The angel is marking the God's servants. The angel is marking God's servants from the 12 tribes of Israel. John then sees the slain lamb leading this army of people throughout the land. God calls on the army to be as sacrificed, just as the lamb was, to suffer and bear witness to him. God is weird. Okay, so moving on to the seventh seal. The seal is broken, and seven trumpets emerge. Fire is thrown down upon earth, and the seven horns sound. These seven trumpets symbolize different things God does to earth. The first five represent plagues God brings upon earth. These plagues are the same, are some of the same plagues that afflicted Egypt, which include, but are not limited to, hail, water turning into blood, demon locusts, darkness, poison water, shit like that. So this is another callback where John is throwing this in and saying, or rather his vision is throwing it in and saying, remember this stuff from Egypt? It's going to happen again, baby. And the horns are bringing it in. Same shit. The sixth trumpet represents the four horsemen. And just like before with Egypt's Pharaoh, even after all of these plagues, the nations of earth did not repent. So these seven trumpets sound. They bring forth all of this fire, brimstone, the horsemen of the apocalypse, plagues, and the people of earth are like, nah, we're good. If I remember, I think I wrote it down over here. Hear the locusts again? It's real. If I wrote it down, I think one of the plagues, it's over here. One of the plagues were four angels will be released to kill one third of the earth's remaining population via an army of 2 million. I'm sorry, 200 million. So one of these plagues was angels came down and killed a third of the population, and the people of Earth were still like, meh, we're good. We're good. I just have a hard time believing this, John, that these angels came down and were just killing and killing and killing a third of the Earth's population, and still people were like, pah, whatever. Anyway, at this point, John has a vision inside of a vision, visionception. We're going to get back to his main vision after we explore this vision. An angel presents the open scroll to John and asks him to eat it, to physically eat the scroll and tell its message to Earth's people. John says, cool, I'll do that. He eats the scroll and has two visions. John sees God's martyred people at a temple and is told to measure the distance between them. The people outside the temple are trampled and die. This is supposed to symbolize how God's people may be persecuted and killed, but so long as they are his people, symbolized by the temple, they will be victorious. The second vision shows two prophets that tell the corrupt churches to turn back to the true teachings of God. Then suddenly, this weird lion demon fire creature thing appears and kills the two prophets. God then brings the two prophets back to life. The corrupt churches, seeing this, repent and go back to following God. Such a crazy tangent vision. So this weird demon fire creature is going to come back into play later on in the main vision quest, not the side quest we're going on here. And in this vision, within a vision, it's revealed that the corrupt churches need to imitate the sacrifice of the Lamb, win the victory through mercy rather than force. So this same God that moments ago was like bringing plagues upon Earth's people is now saying, win over your enemies with loving them. So it's a weird, God's confusing. That concludes the tangent vision. Jumping back to the trumpets, we still haven't hit that seventh trumpet, I don't think. Yeah. The seventh trumpet is when God's kingdom comes to earth. All of the dark stuff happens even more. Fire, death, brimstone, the earth cracks open, lots of people fall inside of it, agony, despair. So yeah, that thus concludes the vision of the seven trumpets. And they were a doozy. Next, we get into another set of visions John had within his vision. So seven visions, to be exact. No, I'm kidding. We're not going to get into that many tangent visions. But there are, when you actually read Revelations, the book of Revelation, there are that many and more tangent visions. So this is why I tried to take good notes, because there's a lot going on inside this book, if you're still following me. I hope I'm explaining this coherently and enough, cohesively enough for it to make sense. John is having visions. He's writing them into a letter that he is planning on sending to the corrupt Roman churches of ancient Asia, and he's explaining what is going to happen if they don't correct their ways and go back to following Jesus. So far, a lamb has appeared, unfolded seven seals of a scroll, seven trumpets have sounded, fire, brimstone, death. A few tangent visions, and next we're going to get into another set of visions he had inside of the visions, like I said before. I'm going to sum it up, basically. Instead of going as deep as it went, I kind of took some cliff notes onto this tangent vision to keep us from going too deep down the rabbit hole. The first vision gets into the suffering of the seven churches under the rule of the Roman Empire, in which a giant, multi-headed snake creature attacks Jesus. Remember the snake creature, because it's also going to come back into play. But the snake creature attacks Jesus and its people on this cosmic battlefield. So it's not on Earth, it's not on heaven, it's kind of in this plane of cosmic existence. Hold up, let me go back over here. Okay. It's kind of on this plane of cosmic existence, but Jesus defeats the multi-headed snake dragon thing, and he slings it down to earth. He says, get the hell out of here. And he slings it to earth, and the snake demon dragon creature starts to spread hatred of Jesus to all of Earth's people. The people conquer the dragon by dying as martyrs for them. Even in the face of persecution and death, they will not give up their faith in God. So John writes. Basically, John is saying there's dark shit here at play that is beyond our understanding. Evil forces that drive people to do terrible things and act terribly to one another, you have to conquer them by showing them love and compassion. Sacrifice yourself just as the Lamb did for you, and your hatred won't get anyone anywhere. I like that. I like that form of God or Jesus that's like, yo, be nice. Everything's chill. Like, maybe just chill out. We can all chill out. What's good? And I don't like the smitey. The smitey guy is, So moving on to John's next tangent vision, in this grand scheme of tangent visions, John sees two creatures. They're all going to, all these tangent visions do come into play, I promise. We just have to explain them. We have to give this little, a precursor so that some of the later parts of the main vision make sense. Moving on to John's next tangent vision, in the grand scheme of visions, John sees two creatures similar to the fire lion beast thing from before. Both are inspired by the spirit of the snake dragon thing that Jesus flung to earth, that guy. So one beast symbolizes military conflict. The other symbolizes economic propaganda, and these beasts demand allegiance. And how do they demand it? Of course, by imprinting the number of 666 on their foreheads and hands. The writing on the foreheads and hands is a reference to an ancient form of Jewish prayer called Shema, where you write your prayers on your forehead and prayers. You can either write them on your forehead or hands, and this sort of marking acts as an anti-Shema. And they'll say, you pray to us, worship us, 666, put it on your hands, put it on your head. And this is how you get the whole mark of the beast thing, is John envisions these two beasts that represent the military conflict and economic propaganda of the time, of either his time, time to come, time that's presently happening, all open for debate, but the 666 mark of, that is the beast that the mark of the, those are the beasts that the mark of the beast is referencing, if that makes sense. So, why 666? Hebrew letters are also numbers. If you spell the words Nero Caesar, Nero being an extreme prosecutor of Christians, and the words beast, both add up to the number 666. So a lot of people take this fact and they run with it. They say 666 is for this reason. The book of Revelations doesn't outright say that, but it's just been interpreted as such, which I think is really crazy. Or not crazy, but really cool, you know. So John is using Nero as a reference to how nations and people in positions of power demand to be worshipped after providing economic security and safety. They frame themselves as gods and become beasts. Sound familiar? Like, maybe tons of countries throughout time? Russia, China, the US, go ahead, they're all beasts, according to this paradigm. Offering the economic and military security. Anyway, opposing this beast, of course, is the slain lamb, Jesus. Following the lamb and escaping this beastly cycle of empires becoming beasts and claiming to be your God, come, be with the true God, be with me. That's what John is saying he's seeing here, is people who are marking themselves metaphorically and potentially physically with this number, 666, who are following these corrupted empires that have said, I want you to be a part of me because I'm offering you security, I'm offering you wealth, I'm offering you all of these things, are becoming in their eyes these gods, these things that are false gods in the eyes of the true God, and you need to ignore those things. You need to leave those things, separate yourself from this vision of security and this vision of false idolatry to these nations, and you need to come back to the true God. That's what's kind of being explained here in one way or another. So, on to the final part. The reason I sound kind of exhausted about this is because the way I'm explaining it, although it may sound convoluted, and the book is far more convoluted with a lot more going on, rather than I'm watering it down to its bare minimum essence. I'm boiling it down to its bare minimum essence so that we can talk about it, or I can talk about it rather on a podcast. So the final part of the tangent vision, it's a vision of two parts, of course. One is a harvest of grain. God comes to harvest all of the good crops, aka his people. He brings them home. The other harvest is that of wine grapes. And the wine grapes are meant to symbolize humanity's romance with evil. And also, Rome was drinking a lot of wine at the time. They were getting, you know, having orgies, getting drunk, rock and roll. So the people hypnotized by evil in this vision, they are the wine grapes, and they are taken to a wine press, and they are trampled to death, which is pretty metal. The book of Revelations is very metal. And summing up this whole side vision, follow the lamb and you will succeed with love and sacrifice, or follow the beast to be eternally suffering in hell forever, fire, brimstone, follow God or die. Now, let's get back to our main vision, the main storyline, the main prophecy John is trying to explain to the seven churches of ancient Rome. This set of sevens plays out with bowls, just like the trumpets and the plagues coming out of them. The plagues are poured from these seven bowls. And just like before, the nations and churches don't repent. This time, instead of the sixth thing being the four horsemen, though, the bowl is poured out and we find something different. The powers of the snake dragon thing, the one from before that Jesus flung to earth on the cosmic battlefield, and the beast from just a little bit ago, the Mark of the Beast, they join forces. It's kind of like a Power Ranger mech suit, where the snake thing that got flung to earth and spread the influence of hatred for Jesus, and the lion, fire, creature, beast thing, they join forces and they create a mega creature, demon thing with seven heads and seven hands and seven hearts and seven brains and seven everything. Sorry. They gather all of the people on earth to fight against God's people at this place on earth called Armageddon. And Armageddon, is it an actual place? Is it a plane that exists outside of earth? It's kind of open to interpretation. It's kind of loose. Not 100% sure. Another kind of vague, convoluted thing. Some people think this battle between the snake, demon, creature thing and all of Earth's evil people and the good people on Earth will physically happen. Other people think it's a metaphor for some sort of like final justice God has on Earth for Earth's people. Moving on to the seventh bowl, we again have another depiction of evil being defeated and God's kingdom coming to earth. So now, with all of this scroll explained and unpacked, John goes into the final set of visions. Whew! It's a lot. It's a lot of sevens. It's a lot going on. I hope I'm spinning this yarn appropriately and palatable enough. It's a really interesting read. Like I said, if you're a fan of like dense fantasy stuff, you might enjoy it. But just fair warning, it is a lot. So now we're getting into the scroll. We're getting into this, the scrolls unpacked. We're getting into the final set of visions from John. The first vision is the fall of Babylon, or overall wickedness. Babylon in the book of Revelations is just meant to describe not necessarily one particular place, but whenever John talks about Babylon in the book of Revelations and throughout the Bible, it's more meant to describe a wicked, debaucherous, anti-Jesus place where people are just having sex and rolling dice and smoking joints and stabbing each other and just crime everywhere. Okay, first vision, fall of Babylon, or the overall wickedness of earth. An angel shows John a very attractive woman who is drinking the blood of fallen Christian martyrs. She is riding the snake dragon beast thing from before, the snake dragon thing that got flung to earth, and her name in the Bible, I'm not making this up, this is actually her name in the Bible, Babylon the Prostitute. So if you're looking to start a punk band, or you're looking, if you're looking to start a punk band specifically, Babylon the Prostitute, 10 out of 10, go for it. And this is where things get super dense in this vision. John has many, many visions of being, of beginnings and ends of empires, starting with the Garden of Eden and coming all the way up to the present Roman Empire. He sees that throughout time, each has followed this archetype of succumbing to temptations and worldly things and losing faith in God. So while he's having these, he's having this huge barrage of visions getting funneled towards him of empires starting with good intentions and moving into evil and corruption and money and greed and military conflict. Babylon the Prostitute is riding the snake demon creature thing with seven heads, and there's a lot going on here. Throughout history on Earth, these empires gain military and economic success, and they turn these things into manifestations of false gods. These empires, or Babylons, will come and go until Jesus returns to replace these dens of sin with his kingdom. These sinners. I feel like I'm a freaking preacher right now. I'm like, Babylon will fall, the sinners will repent, and we shall see a new day. No one in the church of God. I'm sorry. You know, that's how it is. So we know Jesus is coming back. How's he coming back? What's happening? How is this whole thing going to come to a conclusion? And that is the next part of John's vision. Remember, this whole vision is framed as a letter that he's sending to seven churches of ancient Rome. So this is a very dense letter. This next part is the story of the final battle. It is depicted in two different ways. In the first depiction, we see Jesus riding up on a white horse covered in blood before the battle. But the blood is his own. The blood symbolizes his sacrifice. In this depiction of the battle, we see Jesus not swinging a weapon, but using judgment amongst the enemies. As enemies show up, they are judged by Jesus and cast into a hellfire accordingly. After Jesus does the judging, he resurrects the slain Christian martyrs to rule by his side for 1,000 years. So earlier, when the Christian martyrs were crying out, help us, God, and God was like, nah, just chill. Now they're being resurrected. Jesus shows up, he's throwing people into fire and brimstone, passing judgment, raising people from the dead, and now he's going to rule on earth for 1,000 years. Okay, so that's when this, after the 1,000-year rule, the snake dragon thing with the seven heads from before that got flung to earth, he rallies the nations of earth to fight against God's new kingdom. So they wage war against God. And what you think is going to happen right now happens. God's like, nah. And he starts, he's like, didn't you see what I did before? everybody came at me, and I threw them into hellfire. So he starts casting judgment upon them, and he's eternally damning people, and he's saying, you know, go to hell, literally. Don't corrupt my new kingdom that I created here on earth. So basically, when Jesus returns, he's handling shit. He's whipping that ass. He's just saying, I'm here, this is my kingdom, come at me, you're fucked. We're almost through the story. If you've made it this far, I want to thank you once again. We're almost through this vision, rather. I appreciate you, just like Jesus appreciated his followers. There's one final vision in this thing, one last one. This is it. This is the final of John's visions. And it's kind of, you know, it's a vision with a few visions inside of it. Once again, the Russian nesting doll. An angel shows John a super beautiful bride. She symbolizes Jesus's super beautiful bride once again. She symbolizes Jesus's return and rule with his new coveted people. God announces he's coming to live on earth with all the humans. He's hitting that reset button and making everything new and fresh again. Roll out the red carpet. God's coming down in a shiny limo. He's saying, we're about to hit this reset. We're throwing the sinners into the hellfire. It's time to party. God is making a new Garden of Eden where all of the diverse people of earth work together to fulfill God's vision of happiness and eternal peace. In this new world, there are no temples, no churches. The presence of God and the Lamb are the temples and the churches. There are also new humans, human 2.0, which they get into inside the book. They're kind of like humans, but they're bigger, brighter, smarter, faster, stronger. These humans will serve to basically do what God had intended humans to do in the first place, live in his image, to work with God, to create something even he couldn't imagine. Simulation reset. Unplug from the matrix. Open your eyes from the dream. Wake up from the coma. Restart the Big Bang. Infinite Genesis forever. So that ends his book. That ends John's book and his letter. It's been dissected and interpreted for thousands of years. It's super dense. It's full of symbolism. It's full of things that happened, may happen, are happening, may never happen, could potentially be happening on a different plane of existence. So whether you look at it as a cryptic timetable for the end of all things or a spiritual allegory for the hope of humanity, it is definitely an interesting read. Lots of monsters, lots of death, lots of weird stuff, and just a really fun, I don't know why I wanted to talk about the Book of Revelation so much on the podcast, but I feel like I personally reference it in my own life quite a bit, so maybe moving forward, if you listen to this episode, I'll do my own callbacks to this episode like John did in his letter to the churches. And it'll make things in the future make more sense. You'll be like, oh, he's referencing episode 3, that one after he lost his mind and came back to it. Or maybe not. I don't know. And I'm only going to do, because that was such a lengthy one, I'm only going to do one topic this time because it's my podcast and I'll do whatever the bleep I want. But we are going to keep the tradition of the fun fact, because I really like the fun fact. This one had me laughing because, I don't know, this, I sound like an asshole. This one had me laughing because I watched some videos of it, and it's going to sound weird, but it's actually really cute. Japan's Naki Sumo Crying Baby Festival. So during this festival, sumo wrestlers try to make babies cry. It's been going on for over 400 years, and it originates from folklore that says a loud baby cry wards off demons or evil spirits. So they try to get these babies to cry to cleanse the areas where they're going to be doing the sumo wrestling competitions. The festival happens all over Japan on or around May 5th, which my son's birthday is May 6th. So someday I'll take Felix to Japan and see if we can get some sumo wrestlers to make him cry. The festival opens up with a prayer for good health and growth for the participating babies. So that's another part of the festival. Is it's not only meant to cleanse the space, it's meant as a prayer of good health and good well-being to the babies involved. Wrestlers, or student wrestlers, hold two babies up in a small ring made for this competition, and the first baby to cry wins. A blessing of good health. If it's a tie, the stronger or louder cry wins. Sumo wrestlers get the babies to cry by making scary faces or abrupt noises. Typically, it's tradition to raise the baby high into the air as they cry, as this is thought to enhance the blessing. The parents are bestowed with gifts and souvenirs. Babies must be 6 to 18 months to enter, if you're interested. The festival is free to the public, free and open to the public. So like I said, there's some videos of this on YouTube, and they're really funny. And if the sumo wrestlers can't get the babies to cry, there's like a referee that comes around in a scary mask, and he'll sort of pop out at the babies and see if he can get them to cry. I don't know why I picked this as the fun fact, but I read about it and I was like, wow, that is really great. Anyway, I'm not quite sure how long this podcast has been. Thank you for listening. Thank you for the time that you have given me to let... Thank you for the time you've given me to give myself time to heal my mind and heal my gratitude. And I promise I'm going to try and make these more frequent in the future. I know it's been some weeks since episode 2, so bear with me. I'm going to do my best to have episodes coming out more frequently. And once again, I'm going to get back to the questions. I'm going to get back to the format of you submit a question, I take the question, explore the question, and talk about it. For this one, I just needed to do something of my own. Something in my own vein and in my own mind, and yeah, felt good. Any critiques, any advice, anything at all whatsoever, if you're like, I love the podcast, I hate that you do these things, please stop. I'm open to all that. I won't be offended. Once again, I do have a Patreon at patreon.com. If you search for Mount Analog, MT period ANALOGUE, you don't have to do the Patreon. Listening is more than enough, and I really appreciate everyone dialing into my frequencies and being a part of this experience. Remember that your mental health is very important. Check on your mental health. Check on the mental health of your loved ones. Infinite love. Bye. Analog thoughts. Analog thoughts. Analog thoughts. Analog thoughts. Analog thoughts.